know, well, I'm a chicken fried. A cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio. Oh, oh,
oh, oh. Got to figure out how to get this debt under control. $37 trillion worth of debt. Whatever projection you want to use, CBO's or anybody else's, we're running $1 trillion deficits year after year. We went to, after pandemic spending, we've been running $2 trillion deficits. If we want to get interest rates down, if we want to get inflation under control, which is part of what this last election was about, we've got to balance his budget. We have to have a path to balance the budget. And that's what my focus is. How do we get the president's agenda done? How do we balance the budget?
Rick Scott yesterday on Fox News Sunday also saying that the state and local tax exemption increase for the residents of places like New York and Chicago and L.A., San Francisco, he doesn't think that that's going to hold as well. So talking fiscal responsibility, I love to hear that. I want the president's agenda, but I want to cut the deficit, and I'd like to get us to a balanced budget eventually. Jimmy Petronis is our congressman from Northwest Florida District 1. He's in the thick of all this in D.C. right now. Congressman, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me. I tell you, Senator Scott killed it yesterday on Fox News Sunday. Called him afterwards and just told him about how great of a job he did. I think he really struck a balance of what we all aspire to see. You know, none of us want to grow the deficit. And under the House bill, we are going to cut more than has ever been cut ever in the history of any legislation that has been proposed in Washington. But, you know, there's also a need to really get our fiscal future in order.
Oh, completely. I completely agree. And that's, I actually wonder when the Senate gets done with what they do and they come back to your chamber with what I think will be a much scaled back spending, basically, because I think they're going to take out that state and local tax. I'm not sure what some of the other stuff that they might do. Do you think it can still pass the House with the reduced terms? Because obviously, you know, you were the vote. Like, everybody was the vote to get it over the line.
Yeah, I don't like the SALT deductions. I hate them. But at the risk of everything else is in the bill, I mean, the Republicans we have from New York, they'll fall on their sword on this issue, and then we can't pass the bill. Fortunately, when we pass the larger benefit regarding SALT for the rest of the nation, as opposed to just those blue states, we had more members in the chamber. You know, we had more Republicans in the chamber, so we had leverage. And now we get the leverage of one. So it's unfortunate. But hopefully, if the Senate can make this thing better, great. If we can get the votes across the finish line to take their better legislation to the president, great. You know, my fear is if you move the SALT issue too much, we lose the bill. But, you know, I'm willing to go fight with it. I just don't know how you're going to force somebody to vote for a bill if they know they've got leverage. We're going to have our hands full, and you don't want to give away other things. You know, I guess you just kind of evaluate, you know.
You know, one of the other issues that, one of the other things I want to talk about with you is you filed your first bill finally, and not like you were supposed to file something earlier, but you filed a bill to investigate the cover-up of President Biden's cognitive decline. And, I mean, find out what was really going on in our government and, you know, who was signing which things with the auto pen. And, you know, I mean, somebody says he was doing everything, but I'm not even sure he wrote that statement himself. Why this bill for your first one?
Well, I agree with you about it. I don't think he wrote that statement. Look, we took the exact same template of the J6 committee. So we didn't go reinvent the wheel. We did something that had already existed, same structure, same architecture. And I just want to get to the bottom of it. I truly, in my heart, you know, I met President Biden a couple times. I really had my own doubts when I saw him, but I thought, you know what, maybe just got a lot going on. And then you start to see the revelations that are coming out from his staffers, and some of them are just they're self-servicing, creating their own books and doing all this in order to benefit themselves. But I think the reality is starting to leak out. We have heard way too much out of current staff and former staffers of the White House of why we should be questioned. Now, the reason why I want to get to the bottom of it is, do we have executive orders that need to be unwound? Do we have pardons that need to be unwound? What other safeguards do do we need to put in place moving forward to ensure this never happens again? And then why, if the conditions were as bad as they were, why wasn't the 25th Amendment put into place? Was there other compromised elements amongst the cabinet members? So, look, I think transparency is a great thing. If we do it and we find there was nothing wrong going on, then you know what? Then the exercise was warranted, and let's settle those that had doubts and conspiracies of what was taking place in the White House.
Yeah, I mean, at least then you can reassure the American public that it wasn't some grand cover-up and that there wasn't any, you know, inappropriate, you know, government leadership or anything like that. But I just want to assume
exactly.
Democrats are invited to be, and you will, because one of the flaws of the J6 committee, obviously, was the almost no participation by Republicans, or, you know, only participation by people who are dubious Republicans, in my opinion. Will Democrats be a big part of this?
Yeah, I think the way the bill is written, it's 6 Democrats, 8 Republicans on the committee.
Great. That's good. I mean, important.
Yeah, I don't want a circus. I want something that's legit, you know. And you know, if you've got those out there that want to defend or explain, and the Republicans defend and investigate, that's all what this process is about. You know, just get the real answers out there, real transparency. If there's nothing there, then you got nothing to hide.
Right. I agree with that. The feud, or apparent feud, between Trump and Musk it went like viral and nuclear very quickly. We honestly had the thought that this looked almost staged. Like this is, I don't know, a work between them, but you know, like in wrestling terms, like, you know, here's what you say, here's what I say. I don't know what to make of it. It just seems so absurd that people who are getting along fairly well all of a sudden are at massive war with each other. But what's your take on this? What's the significance of this, you think, for the country?
So I think, look, those guys have spent enough time together over the last year that they probably know how each other's going to react whenever they have some type of a public statement. I think there was a lot of truth to what the White House pointed out. There was probably some retaliation between the two bodies where Elon had some things that he really wanted to see in the big, beautiful bill. Sounds like he was definitely advocating for the extension of the EV tax credits. Sounds like he really had his own guy handpicked to lead NASA. And I think as some of these expectations that Elon was hoping to pull off did not come to fruition, then look, there may have been some retaliation out of the White House saying, look, we're just, you know, now the things outside the big, beautiful bill aren't going to happen. Like, we're not going to put your NASA guy in. And so I think there was some pushing back and forth. I think Elon then kind of came to his senses, but he's still not quite there. I think some of the stuff he's still put on Twitter, I was looking, and can be kind of snarky. But he also, this is the same guy that uses funny names or, you know, tongue-in-cheek, you know, coding for some of the things that he does. You put all the models of his Tesla models together, it spells sexy. You know, so this guy doesn't do anything by accident. And so I do think they will have a meeting in the minds. It'll come back around. But I think the president's a very serious person. I think Elon is very serious also, but he's also got those moments where he is also, you know, pretty enjoys making fun of life.
You just blew John's mind with that observation, by the way. He was sitting here looking, and I could see his brain, his eyes, like, wait, is that? Oh, that's what I had not realized that either.
That's website, look at it.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah, click the drop down menu. It spells sexy. He does all types of crazy stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, just to make life fun.
A little bit more entertaining, for sure.
But you know, but the president is wrapped around by a lot of very serious people. And, you know, I think Elon is well-intended, but I do think those two guys will have a meeting in the minds, and there will be other ways. But they're both billionaires that are very driven. They're used to getting what they want right now.
One of the things I wanted to get your opinion on, it's obviously been the big story. We've talked about it some today, just because I think it's been so all in the news and the national news, is the situation in Los Angeles. My own take is, honestly, I think that these protests were generally under control, and putting in the National Guard drew in the professional class of protesters and created a lot of the conflict that we're seeing today. It just I don't know. It seemed to me like that made things worse rather than making things better. And I'm concerned that it's not a solution, you know, really, and especially against the governor's wishes and all that. But you're watching this, too, from D.C. What's your take?
You know, and I agree with a lot of what you said regarding the severity of the protest. Well, but what I do know is you've got Gavin Newsom, who is trying to find ways to find oxygen to keep his flame lit for 28.
Sure.
You've got a Congress right now that we are really having a lot of difficulty seeing the amount of dollars that go to states like California, that especially when it comes to Medicaid dollars, and you see this type of just flagrant, you know, abuse of federal law. So it's like, why are we sending these states that don't want to abide by federal law all this extra money? So I mean, so this is probably where you're seeing the administration, the White House, flare up with their frustrations, because, you know, we're sending these dollars, you know, they don't want to play by the rules, they don't want to obey federal laws, you know, then let's go and have a show of force to shut this stuff down. But, you know, but look, anytime you burn down, you know, law enforcement automobiles, anytime you put your hands on law enforcement, that's inexcusable, and unfortunately some of that was the case.
No, and I see that as well. You know, I think, which has kind of been late developing over the last day, it didn't show up in the original mm-hmm. stuff, but certainly, yeah, I mean, you know, even if the National Guard presence was not justified, even if you take that view, you still don't get to react to them by, you know, engaging in physical force. I mean, you know, the both can be wrong at the same time. You had a opportunity to give a eulogy for John Thrasher, I think on the floor, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yeah, and Speaker Thrasher, I mean, he had a number of titles: Speaker, Senator, Chairman, President. John Thrasher was just, he was a great Floridian. Oh, my gosh. He was not a taker. He was a giver. And, you know, he was just a massive influence of good on so many people that are in public service, me included. I think there was a number of members of Congress actually gave their own John Thrasher speech because he had such a magnetism to him that when he was part of the process, you wanted to learn from him. You wanted to you know, emulate a lot of the leadership skills that he had. But man, the cancer came hard and fast, and you know, didn't know what hit him. And he was just, I mean, he was, you know, 80 years old and he could kick my butt. I mean, he was in amazing shape. You know, but it's just heartbreaking for so many of us to see somebody who we looked up to go, you know, the way he did.
Yeah.
And you know, there was just a lot of good that he has done for our state and service to our nation, and it needed to be memorialized.
Well, it's good to hear. I mean, like, you know, promoting the Patty Marine and, you know, talking about John Thrasher and, you know, just talking about the things from Florida that make us great, that we cherish and are important here, and, you know, bringing those little bit of awareness to the national stage when you're talking on the floor. I you know, I appreciate that. And also,
well,
by the way,
okay, all these members of Congress they're all proud of their district.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, nobody has a district prettier than CD1. Nobody. You can put this district up against anybody. Nobody's got what we've got. Nobody's got the commitment to patriotism, service of our country, sacrifice for our country than CD1. I mean, there's just a lot of incredible elements that we excel at that will always be number one at.
No, that's definitely the case. Congressman Jimmy Patronis, as always, sir, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you again next week. And by the way, your comments at the military forum I thought were very interesting. I'll be covering that over the next couple of days. But good stuff in those, by the way. I really appreciate you participating in that.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, is it online?
It's not. I had.
You watch it?
I have sources.
Okay.
I found somebody to. Shannon Ogletree had a recording that, you know, that I got. So
okay, great. I may get a copy of it. All right, brother. Thanks
All right.
Me.
Talk to you soon. Thanks so much.